listen to the best of the church's music for the season of Lent at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the season of Lent, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
What this movie is saying is that women like being hurt and like being used, and that you as a man are entitled to use women. I just can't think of a worse thing to be teaching our young men.
The fallen world sniffs out this alien smell of the resurrection on you and will seek to stamp it out. It recognizes it for the threat that it is. The principle of this world is death.
If salvation is my personal relationship with Jesus, it makes our problem somehow having an emotional or personal distance from God. So it completely takes the idea of sin out of the question.
While snow blowing our driveways, hardy Minnesotans love to listen to Issues, etc.
We look on in horror. That's probably the best way to put it. Day by day, week by week, sometimes several times a week, there's more news coming out of the Islamic State. Christians are being detained. They're being taken out of their homes, men, women, and children. Some of them are actually being killed in very public ways in modern internet YouTube videos for us all to see. The captions there are often lost to us because we don't read Arabic, and we don't know, even if we could, we don't know what some of these terms mean. Even when they're translated, it's hard to blame the news media when you have a video of Christians, Coptic Christians from Syria being beheaded. Trying to explain what's happening there is easy. It's there for everyone to see, the blood, the gore, the tragedy. Why is it happening? What is the purpose that the Islamic State has in treating Christians this way in such a public manner? We're going to be trying to answer that question, answering the question, how ISIS views Christians. Raymond Ibrahim will join us here for the first half hour of Issues, Etc. Greetings and welcome. Live this Monday afternoon, March the 2nd, I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Dr. Ben Mays will join us with some practical advice on sexual sins, resisting the temptation, from actually an old Lutheran theologian, Johann Gerhardt. We'll be talking with him in the second half hour. Dr. Carl Fikencher will join us in hour two of Issues, Etc. We'll be looking forward to Sunday morning, our regular weekly series with him, according to the three-year series of readings on Sunday morning. We'll be looking at the Ten Commandments, Jesus cleansing the temple, and the hymn of the day, may God bestow on us his grace and favor. That's coming up here in hour two of Issues, Etc. Our call-in number for the next 2 hours, 1-877-623-MY-IE, 877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org. Send us a tweet at @IssuesETC. Or our beloved on-demand listeners, feel free to use any time of day or night the Issues, Etc. comment line, 618-223-8383. Joining us to talk about how ISIS views Christians, Raymond Ibrahim. He's a regular guest fellow at the David Horowitz Freedom Center and the Hoover Institute, and he's author of the book Crucified Again, Exposing Islam's New War on Christians. Raymond, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Hi, Todd. Very good to be with you again.
The what of what is happening, what ISIS is doing to Christians, is pretty obvious. It's just gruesome death, mistreatment, you name it, it's all there. The why is what escapes so many of us. What, as far as you can see, what's the goal of the Islamic State's current mistreatment, very public mistreatment of Christians?
Sure, that's a good question. It varies, you know, from strategic goals and points they're trying to do, believe it or not, to just, you know, innate hatred and dislike. From a strategic point of view, you have to remember, to these people, the Quran and the Hadith, or the, you know, the example and the teachings of Islamic prophet Muhammad, are to be emulated and followed as literally as possible, because that's the blueprint to success. And one of the things in the Quran that it says is to strike fear, or terror, actually, they use the word terror, strike terror into the heart of the infidels or the non-believers, which includes Christians, Jews, and everyone else. So one of the reasons strategically is they actually believe by doing this, they are striking terror into the hearts of the rest of the world, to the rest of the non-Islamic world. And they're doing this intentionally because they believe it will demoralize lots of people. And I think there's some truth to this, in fact. So that's one of the strategic, if you will, reasons that they do it. The other, of course, is it's just really intrinsic hatred. It's a belief that, you know, these Christians are subhumans. It's you'll be surprised how often they rationalize what they're doing, the decapitations, that they actually cite grievances, which are just absurd. But it's just kind of an excuse to just fulfill their sort of, you know, bloodlust hatred of Christians. So, for example, these 21 Coptic Christians, one of the things that the Islamic State said in its publication right when they were being executed is that this is in retaliation and in revenge for Camilla and Wafat, which is basically a reference to something that happened about, I don't know, 5-7 years in Egypt. These are two women who were Coptic Christians and supposedly converted to Islam. And then supposedly the Pope then, Pope Shenouda, took them and tortured them and forced them to come back to Christianity. And so supposedly now these 21 are being killed for that. And what's amazing is an earlier manifestation of the Islamic State in Iraq, if you recall, back, I believe it was in 2010 or 11, attacked the Iraqi church, Our Lady of Salvation of Grace, I believe it's called, and I think some 60 people were killed. It was a very horrific attack on a church. And these were Iraqi Christians who were worshiping on Sunday Mass. And even then, they used that excuse of these Coptic women and the Coptic Pope, even though these are Iraqi Christians who don't even know anything about this. So my point is, there's just an intrinsic hatred of Christians. You find this throughout the Islamic text, a justification for it. You find it throughout Islamic history being manifested. And you find, you know, and they make excuses left and right to engage in it. So that's really what it comes down to, those two points, striking fear in the heart and satisfying their own bloodlust against these infidels.
Why Christians in particular? What role do Christians play in their particular reading of the Quran, their particular version of Islam?
Sure. I would argue that there's nothing in the Quran, there's nothing that makes Christians specifically worse than other infidels. As you probably know, there's the more tolerant verses that are of course, there's this whole doctrine of abrogation. They're no longer applicable. They're more of a historical thing. But the reason that Christians are more is from a historical point of view, because the Christians were always seen as the chief competitors. Christianity and Islam are really the only proselytizing faiths, if you will, who are trying to actually supposedly, you know, get as many people to convert. Of course, they do this in different methods and reasons. But history, the chief competitors were those evil Christian Europeans across the Mediterranean, and they were constantly being attacked, and they finally had the gall to go on the offensive at one point during the Crusades for a couple of 2-3 centuries and so forth. So I think from a historic point of view, Christians are the infidel par excellence, the ultimate enemy that always attacked and killed.
What is this concept called shirk, and how is it applied by advocates of the Islamic State to Christians and others?
Sure. Shirk is it's just an Arabic word which means to share in or to, you sort of conflate with or generally to associate with. And basically it applies to Christian, to Muslims, to purist Muslims. They do what's called tawheed, which means oneness or strict absolute monotheism. There's just God, Allah, and then that's it. There's nothing near him, nothing close to him, nothing. So, of course, from Muslim point of view, Christians, and this, you know, I didn't mean to say that theologically Christians are not so bad. Doctrinally, they are. They're condemned, for example, in the Quran. It says, you know, Allah's curse on those who say Jesus, son of Mary, is the son of God, which is, of course, a reference to the Trinity. And you get this theme all throughout the Quran and Islamic teachings. And that is shirk. They accuse Christians of associating someone, in this case, Jesus, with God, and basically the Trinity. So that's a great and unforgivable crime. And that's one of the reasons, of course, Christians are so hated and condemned according to Islamic teaching. And that's why the Islamic State is doing what it's doing. But others are also accused of this. For example, a Hindu is a prime target of shirk because they're basically polytheists. They even accuse the Jews, who you would think are strict monotheists, of being engaged in shirk. There's a reference to some Ezra and no one's really quite sure who this is in the Quran, but they say that the Jews took Ezra as an associate of Allah and so forth, and they're also somehow accused of shirk. But that's what it comes down to, and it's sort of an attack also on the concept of idolatry, because supposedly if you do this, then it's idolatry. You know, Christians are idol worshippers of Jesus, who was, of course, just a prophet, a man, and so forth. But yeah, that's basically it.
So they have, I mean, again, we can't speak to whether or not every adherent to the Islamic State has this way of thinking. Sometimes, as you said, it's just bloodlust and hatred. But they do, at least in theory, have, at least, as far as they see it, a theological justification for singling out Christians as they have been.
Oh, absolutely. I would argue that mainstream Orthodox Islamic thinking is supportive of the hostility that the Islamic State is expressing towards Christians. Not necessarily that you have to, you know, decapitate every single one. Though even that, you know, they can point to the Quran, they can point to Islamic teachings. There's Quran 9:5, which basically says it's almost an open-ended commandment to kill every idolater or polytheist when you come upon them. And you kill them, and they even cite that. It's known in Quranic theology as the sword verse, or the verse of the sword, along with Quran 9:29. So I would argue that Islamic law, the way it's understood, the way it's been seen, especially historically, before this age, when there was this sort of apologetic movement where many Muslims are trying to sort of whitewash Islam and say, no, that's not what it is. And they're doing that because, of course, they're weaker than the infidels that are around them. I'm thinking of Muslims in America or in the West. But when Islam was strong, there was no Muslim who would have argued these points. If you look at the Ottoman records, if you look at the sultanates all throughout the Middle East, and the theologians and the jurists and their teachings, the idea that there's us, Muslims, against them, infidels, chief among them Christians, is just concrete. That's not open to debate. And so I would say Islam is what Islam is, but I would agree with you. There are, of course, Muslims who do not feel this way, but they're not reflective of some sort of moderate Islam. They're just reflective of themselves, and for whatever reason, they want to believe this, and they can do that, but it's really wrong to think that they represent Islam. They don't.
Raymond Ibrahim is our guest. He's a fellow at the David Horowitz Freedom Center and the Hoover Institute, author of the book Crucified Again, Exposing Islam's New War on Christians. We're talking with him about how ISIS views Christians. We'll take a break on this Monday afternoon, and when we come back, another 10 minutes with him. Then Dr. Ben Mays will join us to talk about sexual sins in an hour or two. Looking forward to Sunday morning with Dr. Carl Fikancher, according to the 3-year readings on Sunday morning. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc.
Vision casting leaders in the church, differences between men and women, naturalism, biblical archaeology. You can meet and hear Issues Etc. regular guests discussing these topics at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 19th and 20th in Collinsville, Illinois. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Registration is $100 per person. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 19th and 20th in Collinsville, Illinois.
Did you know that we send out an email each week that details upcoming show topics? It's available for you to include in your weekly church bulletin. Just click the Issues Etc. Journal logo at our homepage, issuesetc.org, and sign up to receive the church bulletin blurb. It's an easy way to invite your fellow parishioners to listen to Issues Etc. issuesetc.org. Look for the Issues Etc. Journal logo and register to receive a weekly bulletin paragraph from Issues Etc.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.
We talk to the biggest names in religion today, liberal bishop John Shelby Spong.
I don't think Jesus ever preached the Sermon on the Mount, for example. I don't believe anybody ever took 5 loaves and 2 fish and fed 5,000 people. I don't believe that's possible to do.
Liberal Bible critic Bart Ehrman.
There's a difference between what the historical Jesus actually said and what the Gospels say he said. And to understand what the historical Jesus was really like, we have to get behind the Gospels.
Muslim critic of Christianity, Reza Aslan.
By definition, the resurrection is an ahistorical event, and so therefore historians have no right, no business commenting upon it.
Where else on Christian radio will you hear these guests challenged with important questions? Talk radio for the thinking Christian, Issues, etc. Listen live or on demand at issuesetc.org. Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're answering the question, how ISIS views Christians. Raymond Ibrahim is our guest. Raymond, can you explain, this is one of the things that's kind of mystifying to many of us, at least here in the United States, and that is the appeal that the Islamic State holds, not only for Muslims in the areas where they hold sway. I think I can, in kind of a strange way, understand that, but there's a nationwide appeal. There's almost a global appeal, especially in the West, for some when they see the Islamic State. How would you understand it?
Well, I would understand it as the Islamic State fashions itself and portrays itself. And in fact, I would say they're doing a good job of being very, very true, unapologetic, and literal to Islam in a way that no other group has been. There's a concept, I sort of alluded to it earlier, and it's called taqiyya, which is basically, it's a legitimate form of dissembling around non-Muslims. Whenever a Muslim is around non-Muslims and they have authority over him, they're stronger than him. So, for example, a Muslim in America or in Europe or so forth, he is permitted by Islamic Sharia law to feign, his beliefs to the point he can even say, I'm not a Muslim if he wants, or he can play the, or say, I'm a moderate, I don't believe in what they're doing, and so forth. So I think one of the appeals of the Islamic State is a lot of Muslims deep down inside, I think, resent having to do that and having to play this game. So here you have this group now who's so unabashedly doing what they're doing and following strict Islamic law, decapitating heads just like their righteous forebears did, just like Prophet Muhammad ordered people to do, and they did it, and they had hundreds of people decapitated. Muhammad had slaves, he had concubines. They destroyed temple, and Muhammad himself destroyed the Kaaba when it was full of idols and so forth, just like they're doing with these, you know, Babylonian statues and churches and so forth. So I think the appeal is like Muslims can now raise their head and say, hey, we don't have to play by your rules, Western infidels and so forth. And here's the Islamic State. They don't care. They're just laying it down and they're doing it. And the other thing I think is coming to play, and this would be towards Western Muslims, which I think you're probably interested in, is I think there's a sort of strange and symbiotic relationship between Western liberal culture that actually radicalizes Western Muslims. If you go to a lot of Muslims in the Middle East who don't know much about the West, you may find them actually less radical than Muslims born and raised in Europe. And I think the reason is because they really get disgusted from Western secular liberal culture, and it pushes them very much back to their own heritage, especially when the same secular liberals and atheists are constantly praising Islam and talking about how wonderful it is, and really, you know, supporting it. So I think I've seen this firsthand. I've read about it. I've talked to people about it. And I think it's really legitimate. And I've talked about this even more from a historical point of view, which we can get into, but it's a long point. And it's a very important point. And what I'm discussing now is the latter end of that point, which is there was a time when Muslims were very Western looking. And that was when the West was strong and dominant and unapologetic. The more, starting in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and so forth, that the West became sort of craven and apologetic and, you know, just and you know, homosexuality and liberalism and licentiousness and all that, which they always reference, I think a lot of Muslims were turned off that and they started falling back into their own heritage. And so not a surprise, things like the Iranian Islamic Revolution happened in the 70s and so forth. When if you go back, and many people are surprised, in the 1900s, there was no such thing as what you're seeing right now. It's not that Islam didn't exist. It was immensely on the retreat. And most Muslims were trying very hard to be Western. That's how you get Ataturk. You know, Turkey went from being the Ottoman Empire, which was the standard bearer of Islam, to being the most secularized country because its leaders, Ataturk especially, tried very hard to be Western because that was what you do. Now there's this movement and a revulsion to the West because of how it's seen as godless. And Muslims are now falling into this, into their own heritage, and seeing the appeal in the Islamic State for the first reason I also mentioned.
So rhetoric from our leaders and other Western leaders that is constantly ignoring Islam's place in a lot of these activities, or is speaking glowingly of Islam, while at the same time, the same kind of liberal values are right. propagating the things that they find most offensive about Western yep. civilization is exacerbating the problem, making it worse by doing this.
Exactly. And the point is, if you go back in history, when the West was more, let's say, Christian and more unapologetic and more objective and not whitewashing history, you have to remember that what the Islamic State is doing, this stuff, you know, the Christians of earlier generations and Europeans were very well aware of this stuff. This was standard history of how Islam spread and how it operates. So this was not a surprise. And I think Islam was beaten on the field once Napoleon came into Egypt, 1798, a sort of symbolic date and so forth. And at that point, they just realized, you know what? Islam used to be might makes right. Now we've been beaten by these infidels, so they have some right, you know, and we follow them. And then they shave their beards and put on suits and westernize in various ways, even ways they didn't realize. But then when the West lost its own morale and its own faith and started into the sort of spiral downward into liberalism and so forth, you find also a move, a reaction, once again, so from a positive reaction of emulation, it became a negative reaction of contempt in the Islamic world and sort of a hearkening back to this, you know, golden age, or at least how they believe it, of Islam. And that's the final solution. We have to go back to that and do that. And then the great irony, of course, is it's sort of exacerbated by the West itself by playing the game and humoring and appeasing a culture that does not understand those things and sees them as weakness. They've only pushed many Muslims back into that sort of radicalization.
And finally, with about a minute here, how does ISIS, as far as you can tell, view Muslim societies that attempt to have it both ways, that attempt to kind of cozy up to the liberal West and at the same time fly the flag of Islam? How do they view them?
Well, they, in one way, they understand and appreciate it. So they have no problem with, let's say, a Muslim living in the West whose true allegiance is to them and to that sort of Islam, but who pretends that he's not. They'll completely understand that, and they like that because in its own way it helps their cause, but it's a sort of subversion. So I don't think they mind that. That's why you find very often they'll enter an area and then and they're not just the Islamic State, but Al-Shabaab and Boko Haram, and they'll separate the Christians from the Muslims, and they do that by saying, can you recite the Quran and so forth? And that's what you need to do, because now you've proven you're with us, and then they kill everyone else. So it's not that you have to be so literal. Like, and they understand the Taqiyya game, and they advocate it for whoever should do it, people living there. So, but they'll also kill a Muslim who's not seen as a true Muslim. That would be, let's say, a Shia, for example, and so forth. So, you know, they have a very literal understanding, but they do have an understand and appreciate the concept of deceiving the infidel.
Raymond Ibrahim is a fellow at the David Horowitz Freedom Center and the Hoover Institute. He's author of the book Crucified Again, Exposing Islam's New War on Christians. You'll find a link to his website at issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Raymond, thank you very much for being our guest.
Sure. It was my pleasure, Todd.
When we come back, we're going to spend some time, in fact, the remainder of this hour, talking about sexual sins, some good advice from an old Lutheran, a rather old Lutheran, Johann Gerhard, who talks about how not only to heal from sexual sins, but also to counter the temptations. You don't have to live in the 21st century to be beset by this problem. Dr. Ben Mays of Concordia Publishing House will be our guest. He's authored an article in the latest Lutheran Witness magazine titled Healing from Sexual Sins. We'll be right back.
Organist Service, aptly abbreviated SOS, really has come to our rescue.
Pastor Jim Hollowatch of Christ Lutheran Church in Jackson, Mississippi.
With the ever-growing shortage of skilled musicians in our community, we were approaching a real crisis. But thanks to the Substitute Organist Service, help is always just minutes away. With its easy, intuitive interface, friendly customer service, and outstanding musicianship, you really couldn't ask for more.
You can find out more about the Substitute Organist Service at churchmusicsolutions.com.
Yes, there is a Messiah in Seattle. Messiah Lutheran Church and Concordia Lutheran School have served North Seattle for over 60 years, and we invite you to join us on Sunday mornings at 8 and 10:45 with Bible study at 9:20. Messiah Seattle is proud to support Issues, etc. To learn more, watch our adult information class videos online or on DVD. Our website is messiahseattle.org, 206-524-0024.
Christ at the Center, The Justification of the Ungodly, A Contemporary View of Faith and Reason, The Holy Spirit in Christ. These are just some of the almost 30 essays included in Propter Christum, Christ at the Center. It's a new book of essays in honor of Issues Etc. regular guest, Pastor Daniel Preuss. Find out more and purchase Propter Christum at shop.logia.org. Propter Christum, Christ at the Center, shop.logia.org.
Steadfast Lutherans, people who believe the traditional Lutheran preaching, liturgy, and hymnody continue to deliver Christ crucified for sinners today. The Reformation attempted to return the Church's focus on what we do for God back to a focus on what God does for us, that Christ died for our sins in accordance with the Scriptures. Some things never change. The gospel is still under attack from inside and outside the church. To see how Lutheran doctrine and practice preserve the gospel, visit steadfastlutherans.org.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Do you wish your Lutheran school offered Latin, Greek, or logic? What about German or calculus? Right now, local Lutheran schools in two different states are utilizing Wittenberg Academy to expand their course offerings. Whether it's Latin for third graders or logic for seniors in high school, Wittenberg Academy can help. For your homeschooler or for your brick-and-mortar Lutheran school, we have solutions. To find out more, visit wittenbergacademy.org.
Listen to chapel services live weekday mornings from Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana at issuesetc.org. Morning chapel from Kramer Chapel, live weekday mornings 9 Central, 10 Eastern, 8 Mountain, and 7 Pacific at issuesetc.org.